Good morning. I'm Donna Quinn, and for the next half hour, you'll be listening to Talk of Our Towns. Pioneering spirits doing extraordinary things still exist in Oregon. It's not common to find a privately held ranch whose headquarters is a National Historic District. It's even more uncommon to find one in Oregon that sustainably produces a wide variety of all-natural handcrafted meats, fibers, and garments. In fact, the Imperial Stock Ranch is the only one. Today, owners Dan and Jeannie Carver are using sustainable practices started more than 135 years ago. Their story is especially relevant in today's world and an inspiration for all of us, no matter where we live. I'm just so delighted to have Jeannie Carver here. She is here via phone from her ranch near Shanico, Oregon. Welcome, Jeannie.
Good morning, Donna.
Very glad to have you on the program today.
Well, I'm honored. This is quite a treat for me.
I think your story is something that will inspire people listening, and I know that there are people who have visited the ranch, and it has changed their lives and their ideas of what can be. So perhaps we should start off with just a little history of the Imperial Stock Ranch.
Excuse me. Okay. I love sharing this story. I'm looking out the window right now, and I'm looking at the historic ice house and smokehouse that served the historic Hinton home here, which became the showpiece of the empire. And the buildings and structures, even the historic plantings, inspire me on a daily basis. So, but the Imperial Stock Ranch story starts really in 1852 in the on the Oregon Trail as the Hinton family came west like so many did. Young Richard Hinton was born in their ox cart as they came across, and those folks came right through the desert part of Oregon and came to the Willamette Valley, which was the promised land. And they settled in the Lane County area, actually, in 1852. And they were farmers, like so many were. So this young Richard grew up working beside his father and seeing the Willamette Valley become fenced and plowed and farmed and overcrowded. So when he was a young man at 19 years of age, he had a dream of being a stockman. He didn't really want to be a farmer. So with the lure of free land east of the mountains where there was wide open spaces due to the Homestead Act, he headed east with his saddle horse and a pack horse and his trusty six-shooter and settled on what would become Hinton Creek in 1871, where I'm sitting right now this morning, and he started the Imperial Stock Ranch. He was 19. And he was a young man with a dream, as so many have been and continue to be. Isn't that in Oregon we're known as dreamers? So I guess we kind of fit that mold, too. So young Richard Hinton started the Imperial Stock Ranch as a 160-acre homestead claim. By 1900, when the railroad came off the Columbia River and built into the interior of Oregon, it got as far south as what became the end of the line, the boom town of Shanico. And the Imperial Stock Ranch had been going for some 30 years, or just 29 years at that point, and was then the largest ranch stock and land holding, feeding wool through the town of Shanico. And then by the early 1900s, this ranch achieved the designation as the largest individually owned land and stock holding in Oregon, and it had become one of the biggest sheep ranches in America. So this young Richard was very visionary, and he started with a marginal homestead claim and built it into an incredible Oregon land and stock empire. The ranch has operated continuously. It will be 140 years in 2011, which is quite amazing. Young Richard brought in sheep right away. He brought in cattle not long after, at a time when in Oregon there were still range wars going on between sheepmen and cattlemen. But he had both. And he began planting, putting in fields and planting grains and cutting hay in the sub-irrigated meadows that run up and down these valleys. So he established very early on a four-commodity operation. The ranch has continuously produced all four of those things, grains, hay, sheep, and cattle, to today. We're still doing all of those. So about 1993, we completed the application process to put the headquarters of the ranch on the National Register of Historic Places, because it's such a wonderful example of the operational centers of those big stock empires of the American West during that period of our history. we've become, Dan and I, the stewards first and foremost of the land and the operation, but also the building structures, even the plantings, and the histories of the people that have preceded us. One of the only other things I would add probably right now of real significance was in the 1880s, this young Richard was very visionary, and typically there were meat sheep or wool sheep, and he began importing breeding stock and doing some of the earliest crossbreeding to produce a dual-natured animal that would give him a quality meat frame lamb and a superior fiber in the same animal. He and the neighbors here in this part of Oregon were sharing the information and doing this early crossbreeding, and by 1920, the U.S. Department of Agriculture had made them an official new breed of sheep, considered America's breed, and named the Columbia for this Columbia Basin Plateau where they originated by the early commercial range sheepmen.
So the Columbia sheep are still the sheep that you have on the ranch today?
Yes, we have continued to raise descendants of that historic breeding program.
And I know your website, which I want to encourage everyone to visit, which is a marvelous website, talks about the fact that the ranch, it's like a small town. It's 30,000 acres.
Yes, today it is. Today the ranch is actually much smaller than it was in its heyday. In its heyday, you could move bands of sheep from north of Shanico all the way down past Madras, Redmond, Bend, Lapine, south of Lapine, and into the mountains, the Cascades, where they could see the lights of Eugene from the boundaries of the property that the Imperial Stock Ranch controlled either through ownership or lease. And they would move the tens of thousands of sheep in bands up and down through that stretch of country, which is amazing. The ranch was paying taxes in seven counties, and it's just an amazing story. Today we have about 50 square miles of deeded land that's the heart of what was the center of the operations of the Imperial Stock Ranch. And it is like running a small town. We're our own road crew, fire crew. I won't say law enforcement, but we do have to deal with trespassers. So you get medical emergencies. We really have very little support, so you're a pretty tight-knit family here of our family and the crew in terms of caring for and supporting one another.
And before we get into what a day would entail, let's say, on the ranch and the kinds of things you all are doing now, land management, I mean, you've talked about how he was a visionary person. There were four things, hay and grain and cattle and sheep, and these sustainable practices, which you're actually continuing to use today. So maybe we should talk a little bit about that, the sustainable practices of those days and what you're doing today.
That's a great thread to follow, if you will. That's a great thread to follow, and Dan and I love to share that when people come here to visit. You see, this ranch was historically a large sheep ranch, and sheep are very naturally holistic grazers. They move across the landscape, grazing the plants, revitalizing them, and move on, and the plant allows to rest. The seeds are produced. It reseeds itself, and it's a great rejuvenating action to the landscape. So much of the best range left in the American West were actually sheep ranges in the early days. This ranch has had that continuity of production, and not only with the action of sheep on the landscape, but the fact that it was deeded. And as we've gradually shifted over to cattle and wheat due to a lot of changes, we've had to make some changes in how we manage today. So my husband is an excellent land manager, and he really sees this landscape. We'll use the term factory, although we have a great heart for it. But, you know, with cattle as the primary grazers and sheep, you really need to be able to control the movement of them for the timing on the grass, how often it's grazed and how long it recovers. And so Dan is really knowledgeable in putting together his management plan. We manage the cattle and the sheep through rotational grazing, and that's controlled by fencing. We've done many things to go back to the way Mother Nature does best. So he's converted all the farmland to no-till farming, which is very low input, which has reduced chemical use, reduced numbers of trips over the field, reduced our fossil fuel use, hugely. We leave no bare land open to expose it to erosion of wind and water and runoff. And actually, by leaving all of the residue of each year's crop on the ground and seeding right into that, we're actually building soil rather than losing soil. This mat of vegetation also is excellent at capturing water. So we're recharging our streams, our perennial streams are running in more volume than they did in the past. Creeks that went dry during part of the year are running year-round. It's a really great story of improving the health and diversity of plant life so that they can more readily capture sunlight and convert it. And this is what the grazing animal does, is come along, bite the grass, convert that sunlight energy into the food, fiber, and skins that have been providing life to man on this planet for thousands of years. So really, Dan's a grass grower, or I even talk about we're sunlight farmers. We're sunlight farmers because everything we produce is really transforms sunlight energy.
What's amazing is, author, there's no waste. And I just want to read a quick quote here from Norm Thompson, because the wool, the fibers that you produce from your sheep, and the wool, the yarns, all of these things are made into beautiful clothes. And Norm Thompson has this to say in the fall catalog about the Imperial Stock Ranch. Amid the beautiful high desert of Central Oregon, the Imperial Stock Ranch embraces thousands of acres of healthy, thriving grasslands, waterways, and animal life. Guided by a simple philosophy, be kind to the land, and it will repay you. It is proof that sustainability is a viable, attainable way of life. This idyllic existence not only makes for happy sheep, it makes for superior wool and beautiful finished products. There's so much to this story, because not only are you raising beef and lamb, which is used by the finest restaurants throughout the United States because there aren't the hormones and the additives, and they have a natural grass-fed life, and everyone is very concerned about, where's my meat coming from? So not only are you doing that, but you're doing fibers. I mean, when someone says, what do you do on a daily basis? What do you say to them, Jeannie?
What do we do on a daily basis?
You have so many things.
A little bit of everything. What's funny is the ranch is a full-time life, and it really is not a job. I say full-time life because it is. The orchards, the gardens, the cattle, the sheep operations, farming. We don't have a down season. So a typical day here is very, very diverse. But since we began the direct marketing in the late 90s, as a result of changing marketplaces and consolidation and loss of markets, we had to creatively adapt and create our own product in order to stay alive as a family ranch. And so we tiptoed into this, taking our beef to the table, our lamb to the table, our fiber into a product and selling it. And so now we're running a meat company, a yarn company, and an apparel company. And so you plop that into the middle of ranch life, and it's a little bit crazy sometimes around here.
One of the things that I'm also struck by is the fact that needle arts are so popular, and I want us to kind of go into a little bit about on the fibers, and I love the fact that you say you're sunlight farmers. And I'll just do a little station ID. If you've tuned in now, just now, you are listening to KMUN 91.9. This is Talk of Our Towns. I'm your host, Donna Quinn, and my guest today is Jeannie Carver. She is the owner, with her husband Dan, of the Imperial Stock Ranch, and they have a sustainable ranch, which produces not only fine meats, lamb and beef, which are at tables and restaurants everywhere, but I've read some of the reviews, and people say that your meat is incredible.
Well, the flavor profile is really outstanding. They live an incredible life. They graze freely as nature intended. And our meats are handcrafted, meaning it's the old way. So we personally select them for when they're, finished. And then when they're harvested, we dry age those carcasses, the meat, on the bone, the way it used to be done, for 21 days at least before it's cut to the chef's specs and then delivered to the restaurants. And in particular with the lamb, we market a true spring lamb, so they are harvested between 4.5 and 8.5 months of age when they're at their premium frame and weight. and they've been on mama's milk and nature's grasses as their total diet, and they just have this really delicate profile that chefs absolutely love, and diners alike, a lot of private people are our customers as well.
You, when you say direct marketing, so how do you sell your meat and your yarn, your fibers, all of that? How does that work?
Well, you know, I mentioned that just a few minutes ago, the changing global marketplace and consolidation that we see in almost every industry in this country, you know, which means more big business and not so many small businesses. And, of course, those have chased cheap labor and cheap costs, and it's really changed. It's really changed, particularly in food. We can see it, our food supply. But the results of that, we believe, have take time to see, and we're all beginning to see those now, the results to our own personal health, to the health of our families, our communities, the strength of our very nations, and of the health of the entire planet. So when we lost those markets, we decided we had to do something different. Sometimes the way forward is a return to tradition. And so we simply reach out and began asking people if they would be interested in a local product. And it's much more popular today than it was, you know, a while back. But basically that's it. I knocked on the door of some restaurants and asked if they were interested and got a couple to be interested. So we began, I call the chefs or email them every week, have been since 1999. They give me their orders. They're like part of the family. And then we take their orders. We give the cutting instructions on how all those cuts should be prepared. We pick them up every week, and we make the deliveries to the back door of the restaurant. And yesterday I was in Bend at one of the resorts, and the chef greeted me with a big hug, and he says, you know, it's just so cool that you walk in my door every week and hand this product to me. He says, I can't tell you what that means to me. And those relationships are really what motivates Dan and I to keep going. In the fiber, we started with yarns, and as soon as I put a local Oregon yarn out there a few places, people were so excited to find something in fiber that didn't get shipped in here from a long way away, and they began buying it, and I got to say today we're really a buzz and probably the American story at the national yarn trade shows in this country. And Central Oregon wool yarns are selling in the heart of London, clear into Europe, which is absolutely amazing because England's always been known for its wools. So our Central Oregon sunlight is making its appearance in lots of places.
I like this on the website. It talks about wool, you know, nature's miracle fiber. Mm-hmm. And it says, once a year, we harvest the soft, versatile wool from our flock of Columbia sheep and begin the process of transforming this naturally renewable resource into a wide selection of fibers and yarns. All of our wool is custom milled without harsh chemicals or extreme temperatures, leaving it comfortable, soft, and pure. Specially colored to reflect the ranch's unique high desert landscapes, Imperial Yarns and Fibers offer knitters, weavers, and other fiber artists a wonderful palette to select from. And we here in Astoria have Astoria Fiber Arts Academy. So, and the needle arts are very popular. Yes, I mean, that's growing, isn't it? You want to address that a little bit?
Oh, it really is. And so what happened immediately was people would come across this in one way or another or something, and say, but I don't knit. Could you have someone make this for me? And so I said, well, okay. So I, because you got to understand, I don't knit or weave or do any of those fabulous things. You know, I'm in the dirt or outside all the time. But I began networking with local and regional women in the fiber arts: knitters, weavers, felters, crochet, seamstresses, designers. And I got to tell you, we have an incredible group of talented textile artists in the Northwest. You know, the Southwest has been known for its textile arts and weaving, but the Northwest can take a backseat to no one. We have incredible artists here. And so we've, over time, developed this network of women, about 20 different fiber artists that, around their own schedules, in their homes, they are production weaving, production knitting, felting, and producing beautiful apparel. The highlight of which was probably this last fall when we were asked to headline Portland Fashion Week, and a lot of that was due to the young designer from Portland, Anna Cohen, that's been working with us in this last year and a half. She is known as a sustainable fashion designer. And my vision was, gosh, I already have so many jobs. trying to figure out what to make out of this and what the market might want, what I really need is some of our Oregon designers to hook in with me and take fabrics and use them so that I can keep fiber artisans working. They can have their bread and butter work of producing fabrics, and then designers can use those for apparel. You can see my thinking. This is a natural evolution here in the project. And we did headline Portland Fashion Week to rave reviews, and it was really ranch to runway, just as we see in food with gate to plate or farm to fork. Because for Dan and I, the sunlight fibers have never been a different story than the food that provides sustenance to us. So those interconnected relationships of man, grazing animals, and the natural resource base and sunlight. Sunlight, soil, water, grasses, animals, and man have an interconnected relationship that is thousands of years old. And we all are called to honor and steward that and nurture that. So the fiber artisans are now a part of the family, and that's what was really neat about having a finished product to partner with other companies with, is they have an apparel piece now that has a traceable, authentic story clear back to the very grass in the Oregon sunlight where it began.
And Jeannie, you actually offer tours on the ranch for people. I know mm-hmm. you said that you actually had a group of knitters come and mm-hmm. have it take a tour of the ranch recently.
Yes, last week we had three tours, and they were very diverse. One was a fiber retreat held 20 minutes away on the Deschutes River, beautiful setting. It's actually our kids. They have a lodge there with a restaurant, a small conference facility. It's right on the banks of the river. It's just lovely. So that was the setting for the retreat, and then part of the retreat was a tour out here. And that was a wonderful group, and they were here about 3 or 4 hours. And the historic buildings, the sheep, the landscape, and the management of the grasses and how we convert sunlight energy to fibers. And then they could shop at the Imperial Yarn Shop, which actually is in the old servants' quarters to the big house, is today the Imperial Yarn Shop. Another tour was a young man whose grandfather and father grew up as sheep herders. And he wanted to reconnect with his ancestry. So he scheduled a family trip here to come to the Imperial Stock Ranch to see the sheep and to go through the historic buildings and the museum room here and talk about the old days and learn, not only reconnect with his own family history, but with the history and tradition of the sheep culture. And you got to forgive me, but I forget the third one.
Oh, that's perfectly fine. And
so
I
very
think
diverse.
You had didn't you have a Patagonia tour?
Well, not exactly. What happened was a magazine story got the attention of the founder and owner of Patagonia, Yvon Chouinard, because he has a very successful and reputable clothing company with a very green reputation. He founded 1% for the Planet, a fabulous product and company, and he's a very visionary man. And he read about how we were harvesting sunlight and taking it all the way to finished goods within 100 miles of the ranch. And he was fascinated with that because he's very concerned about the planet and the health of the planet. And yet his product kind of has a trail all over the globe, you know, even though he does many things to be environmentally progressive. So he came to see us and spent some time here on the ranch, and it was really amazing. We took him on a land tour. Then we fed him a great meal of everything from the garden and from here. And then he looked at the apparel line, my rolling rack, and he was just amazed. And he stood in front of the historic Hinton home before he left, and he said, "I've always believed revolution starts at the bottom. I think this is it." And Dan and I didn't know quite what he meant at first. And he said, "No, I would really like to have my fabric development team, my carbon footprint team, my daughter, and everyone that I want to be as excited about what you're doing as I am. I really want them to come here." And of course, right after that, the economy crashed and everybody's budgets got cut. And anyway, but it lifted our hearts and our spirit and gave us the motivation to continue to persevere, to overcome a lot of obstacles and challenges we face every day to bring an American, particularly a local and regional product, to the marketplace against the tide of outsourced, imported merchandise that's dominates our shelves.
everyone wants, I think, now to know that their food is safe. They want to know. They want to support local. And one of the things also on your website, and we only have a couple of minutes left here, but it says on your website, sustainable agriculture is economically viable, environmentally sound, and socially responsible. And you all are doing that. And if you have any last words for the listening audience, what would you want to say to them?
Well, the first is that one of the greatest blessings to my life has been the relationships with the women. Gosh, I'm sorry. But the textile artisans and the women that have been involved in this project have enriched our lives in a way I never imagined, never imagined. But the last thing I would say is that my husband tells a wonderful story here of how we've returned salmon with cattle. And it is a marvelous story to be on site to see and hear, because in 1990, only two salmon returned to Bacalo, a major tributary of the Deschutes River, and it was a primary spawning habitat. And over the course of the last 20 years of work on his part and our ranch family's part here, and the help of a lot of agencies, we saw record numbers of more than 800 salmon return in the last couple of years. So in a very short two decades, we've made a huge impact in helping assist nature to recover from some of the things that happened with man, all of us learning lessons in what we think is new technology, which sometimes we don't know the results of for many years. So returning salmon with planned grazing is a pretty good story.
It's a great story. And also, you partner with soil and water conservation districts. You work with, I mean, that kind of thing where you are partnering with these agencies is an excellent thing. Also, and my engineer, Terry, has a question. He wants to know how many people are employed on the ranch?
Well, my husband and I, and my husband grew up on the Nestucca, by the way, the Oregon coast.
Oh,
we love
coast.
Astoria area, all of the Oregon coast. Our oldest son is named Blaine, and so my husband and I, and oldest son Blaine, and we have three full-time men that work here, and one is married, and so she works as much as she wants, and she's my absolute right-hand person in the fiber business, washing yarn, skeining yarn, labeling yarn, and fulling and finishing fabrics. We work together. I run the Imperial Sweatshop right here in the here at the headquarters.
I think we have to do another show about that. I think we have so much we can talk about. Jeannie, a last little thing here. I'm so grateful that we connected, so grateful that you were able to be on this program, and I hope that people will go to the imperialstockranch.com website and read about the history and learn about the fibers and the land management. And I know that you have a mission of trying to help people eat local, buy local, and it is good for the economy. It's good for everyone.
That's true. It is. Healthy communities, healthy regions. You know, I guess one of the biggest victories this past year was taking the microphone on the stage at Portland Fashion Week to a sold-out audience of media and fashion critics and having 15 minutes to tell the story of agriculture to a group of people that hadn't thought about it. And but my comment, I guess, is, and my belief is that agriculture is the very strength that underlies every culture and every nation in this world, and we must retain that strength, and we must value that, because it's the basis of life for every one of us on the planet.
Oh, Jeannie, thank you so much for being a guest on the program today. I look forward to talking with you again. We'll do another program in the future.
Thank you, Donna. Thank you so much. What an honor. I'm just thrilled.
Well, we are very supportive of what you're doing here in our region. I know there are people doing this on a smaller scale, but what a great story. Thank you so much, Jeannie.